The following podcast is a production of Institutional Real Estate Incorporated. Before beginning our program, we would like to invite you to sign up for a free trial subscription to one of our publications at irei.com. Whether you are interested in real estate, infrastructure, or real assets in general, IREI has a publication to suit your needs. Select Publications on the main menu to choose a publication. Interested in more than one? Sign up for them all.
This podcast has been sponsored by Juniper Square. Juniper Square is transforming the private capital markets industry with solutions and services that streamline fundraising, investment operations, and investor reporting. Designed for commercial real estate, Juniper Square is trusted by hundreds of investment sponsors to manage more than $1 trillion in real estate investments. Reach Juniper Square at junipersquare.com.
I'm Mike Consul.
And I'm Loretta Klodfelter.
Welcome to Inside the Edition for December 2021.
End of the year.
End of the year. And a big guessing game as to 2022, Loretta.
I know.
And there's several different property types that we're wondering about for 2022, one of which is retail. And you took a stab at this one in the December edition. Taking a look at what is next for retail. What were some of the observations and conclusions?
Well, I don't think it's a secret to anyone that retail has struggled through the COVID-19 pandemic. Now, not all retail property types have had the same experience as far as that goes. And there are definitely variations within that. But painting with the broadest of brushes, retail's had a bad couple of years. And if you tell people to stay in their house, that means they don't go anywhere. They don't go shopping. They don't, you know, go to restaurants with friends. They don't go to movie theaters. All of that has a deep impact on the retail sector. What we're thinking about, though, as we look ahead is, you know, hopefully, maybe, some sort of light at the end of the tunnel. And it's hard to see that now with the Omicron variant kind of sweeping across the country, but there is some amount of hope for the future of retail, and that kind of comes down to a few different questions, and one of them is experience. This was a trend prior to COVID-19, and it's only made, you know, experiential retail more clear what the advantage there is. Now, obviously, it's been very hard to experience retail amid the pandemic, but you know, taking a longer view, it continues to say, you know, what that retail experience will be. And if you think of experience broadly, it's also about convenience. It's about value. And those are the things that shoppers are looking for. You know, can the trip to the grocery store, the mall, et cetera, can that be easier and more convenient and more valuable an experience than shopping online? Because there is a strong threat from the online e-commerce, and that's been clear for a while now. And so, you know, retail has to remake itself into something that people want.
You know, I remember years ago when I interviewed George Zimmer of Men's Warehouse, and at that time he was talking about how we have everyday low prices. We have one big sale a year, and that is it. And years later, I remember going into a Men's Warehouse, and it was like every other retail store. Basically, everything was on sale. And when I talked to the guys who were selling in there, they said, well, the issue is that if we don't have something on sale, people just don't come in because everybody is putting sale signs out there. So recently, I heard a report just a couple weeks ago about how retailers have really been aided by the supply chain problem because inventories are low and they're not able to necessarily carry everything they want, or at least not in the numbers that they need. They are actually charging full price right now, and consumers are paying full price for things. And for the first time in years, retailers are talking about opening new stores in 2022, which is quite a turn of events. You would think, Now, you stop and think about it, the pandemic strengthened e-commerce because there were so many people who really avoided e-commerce, especially, I hate to stereotype, but I think there's a lot of older consumers who felt that it was kind of an alien environment. Well, they were kind of forced to do that. The experience presumably has been good. Their credit card wasn't stolen. Things showed up at the door. Very convenient. But at the same time, the pandemic created some of these other problems, like supply chain problems, that are actually aiding retailers. You think they'd be stinging right now over that. And some of them no doubt are. Well, but there's such an interesting mix of dynamics out there right now with regard to retail.
You know, the other thing, and it's really fun to have this conversation as we are, you know, during the holiday shopping season, right before one of the biggest gift-giving holidays of the year. And, you know, the message right now has been, you know, part of the message of that supply chain challenge was, if you wanted your gift to arrive on time, you may have to go to the store to get it. And so I think that has also been one of the strengths of the supply chain challenges is that, yes, you can order something online, but there's no guarantee it's going to show up in, you know, in a timely fashion. And so if you want something and you want it on Christmas Day, well, you're going to need to go into a store. Now, you know, some of the things that retailers have been doing is, you know, the sort of the omni-channel. So, you know, they're not just a brick and mortar retailer, or they're not just an online retailer. They're available. They're making their product available across the whole gamut of things. And that's, I think, really what the future of retailers, not so much retail property, but the future of retailers is very much going to be an omni-channel one. And you know, and with that omni-channel experience means that you also get a bunch of other things like the buy online, pick up in store, curbside pickup has been a huge innovation amongst like grocery stores in the past amid the pandemic. You just pull up into park and they put, you know, somebody runs out, they put your bags in your truck or van and you drive home. You know, that's a very simple convenient. And again, coming back to what do shoppers want? They want convenience, which is itself part of that experience question. You think about what will drive retail demand and what that will mean for retail property. And you start discovering that we are over-retailed in this country, but it's not always the right retail in the right places either. And so there's opportunity for new retail, which is the right retail, which is the retail that will give people what they want. But there's also going to be, and this is something, you know, we just had an IREI Live webinar this month where we looked at the future of logistics and retail. One of the big messages of that was one that the future of retail is going to involve a lot of redevelopment, a lot of repositioning, and maybe a lot more of a mixed use sort of approach, where it's not just simply one property type, but several linked together that people will be able to experience and use in a single visit or perhaps living in that space.
Mm-hmm. You know, I would add to that, you know, another personal experience is I've got a good friend. She's very thrifty. She doesn't like to spend any more money than she needs to. But when COVID hit and before, and this was early on, she decided, well, I'm not going to go to the supermarket. And there's a service called Instacart. So I'm going to pay somebody. I'll send the list. This person picks up my groceries, delivers it to the door. Now I'm paying more money than I have to pay to have that service. Well, now things have relaxed quite a bit. She's vaccinated. She's not as fearful about going to the store, but she's continued the Instacart because even though she's paying extra, and again, she's quite thrifty, she's just decided this is a really nice service. It's very convenient. And my time is worth having somebody else do the shopping. And then on top of that, in the town that I live in, there's a grocery chain. It's just a local / regional grocery chain called Save Mart. And they have got robots that roll around. They look like R2-D2 or something like that from Star Wars. And they go rolling through the streets and come to a person's door and deliver the groceries. And not even a human being there. Somebody had to load it, and the person on the other end unloads it. But they're finding new ways, and forget e-commerce for a minute. E-commerce, although it can be done with e-commerce as well, it is kind of electronic in that way. I mean, it is e-commerce to the extent that you're ordering it. My point being that there's so many new things that are coming into the mix, and even something like groceries, which originally a lot of people thought was not going to be very good in terms of making electronic orders, because it's kind of like, I like to pick out my own produce. I don't trust somebody else to pick that out. But the truth of the matter is, when you have a professional in the store, a produce person in the store, they'll probably do a better job than we will anyway. Probably pick a better watermelon than I will, knocking on it and smelling the stem. So my point is, there's just so much going on in the space.
Oh, for sure. And I'll admit, I don't think I've been into a grocery store more than half a dozen times in the past 2 years. I have completely shifted over to an ordering online lifestyle. Mm-hmm. Now, but the thing to keep in mind, and just as you mentioned Instacart, just because you're making those online orders doesn't mean that the property isn't still the local retail outlet. Instacart, yes, in particular, is just, a front for somebody else to go and do your shopping in the store for you. And, you know, it's kind of a question of how valuable is your time worth to you to spend, to pay somebody else to take the time to do it, which I think for a lot of people, their time is valuable and it is worth not going to the grocery store yourself.
And exactly, you make the point that these are people who are going into a conventional grocery store and they're looking at their list. I've seen them in there. They're kind of obvious. They're looking over that list. They're hustling around. They're filling the cart, and they're going to deliver it to a home. But yeah, these are conventional grocers, yeah, who have found strategies for fighting back.
Yeah. So whether you're talking about Instacart, and a lot of grocery retailers even, you know, set up the system so that they pair with Instacart or DoorDash or any of these other sort of operations, they're paired up with them so that, you know, they make it happen right through their own website, but then it's someone else who comes in and shops in store. That, as you can see, it doesn't really pose a big threat to the retail property itself, because again, it's all still going through the store. You'll see a lot of this sort of innovation coming from retailers over the next couple of years, because that is a big thing of what they're trying to do, is understand how are people shopping? What is the best way to get the product to the person? And for the property owner, the question then becomes, how can we have the, you know, most attractive real estate with the best tenants who can, you know, really demand, you know, sort of the highest sort of throughput. And that's really what I think is going to be very interesting. You know, the other trend, one of these trends that I really find interesting, that is, you know, when we talk about omnichannel, so often it's, oh, well, you know, you've got your retailer that now has a website and they've allow you to come and, you know, buy online, pick up stores, the curbside pickup. The other trend is retailers that had previously been online only opening up retail storefronts, because they've discovered that, yeah, there's a lot of value to being a retail storefront in the virtual cloud, but there's also a lot of value to actually having a place that somebody can walk in and do shopping. You know, one of the big names in that, of course, is Warby Parker, the eyeglass retailer, which I'm sure you've heard of or familiar with. They started online only, and they found that actually people wanted to walk into a store, try on glasses, and pick them out. Not a surprise. You know, there's
not
a
just
lot
the
of
app
stuff
that shows what your face will look like with them on you, on the bridge of your nose, right? Yeah, I'd like to actually feel the weight of them. I'd like to feel that they're not putting a squeeze on me, and so on.
Yeah, I mean, what a surprise! They want you to do a retail. They want a retail storefront. But I don't know if you've ever been into a Warby Parker store, but I have. And the fascinating thing is that the store is really just a showroom. It is, you know, you try on the glasses, you can, you know, see all of their products. They're always very busy, but the sales associate walks up with an iPad. They order it online for you and it gets delivered and mailed to your house. You know, you don't walk out of there with a pair of eyeglasses. It is, mm-hmm. again, this showroom model that's also something that we're going to be seeing a lot more of, where, you know, you're trying things on, you're seeing what you like, but you're still, it's still an online order. It's still being delivered to your house when it's ready. You know, this is, I think, what's going to be really fascinating about retail is all of the different things that are happening, not to mention the innovations in technology around, well, you know, let's just call it tracking consumers. you know, stores are getting very, very good at tracking who comes into the store, where they go in the store, what they do while they're there, everything to, again, make that shopping experience as valuable and convenient as it is for the mm-hmm. shopper, and as profitable as it can be for the retailer, by making sure that you're getting the right products in front of people, making sure they're finding what they want, and maybe even buying a little more than they expected.
I can't go buy a Simon property, meaning a Simon owned mall, without getting a text message on my phone, because they know my proximity, and then they're telling me that what they've got available. And then because it's holiday season, even though I'm not at home and I'm not even near a Simon property, I got a couple of text messages where they're trying to cue me that basically, hey, it's, we know you're going to be shopping, and here we are, and this is what we've got. So, and that's something I opted into some time ago, and it's not a nuisance at all because they don't over communicate, but it just goes to show how savvy and the technologies that they're really deploying to make sure they stay viable.
Oh yeah. You know, and that's fascinating. The other thing, of course, you know, I mentioned a little bit about the repositioning. That's going to be a big trend going forward. We're going to see a lot of properties get turned into something more in line with what consumers want. And there are going to be challenges around that. You know, I've heard estimates, something around half of all shopping malls are likely to close in the near term. You know, regional mall properties, there's a lot of them that are no longer fit for their market. And some of them are sitting on, you know, acres of land in a prime location. Now, what you're going to run into there is some real problems around entitlements and zoning. You know, you can't just walk in, buy a mall, and think you can turn it into maybe a you know, mixed use or single family or any other sort of, you know, office campus. That's probably not going to be more than maybe at the margins where you're really going to be able to get some work there. But, you know, taking an existing property, repositioning it slightly, adding some more open air sections, maybe beefing up the restaurant count. These are all things that can be done to make a property a lot more appealing. And I think you will see a lot of really interesting stuff in that space as well.
Yeah. And, you know, it's interesting that you've got the traditional retailers have been forced to become e-commerce retailers as well and moving into the whole omni-channel space. But then you've also got these online-only stores or online-only retailers who are opening actual physical structures. I mean, Amazon started doing that. And really, Apple blew everybody away years ago when they opened the Apple stores and did incredibly well and are still doing incredibly well. Just showed everybody, here's a tech company that came into the space and showed everybody, this is how it's done. You want to maximize your sales per square foot. I do believe they have the highest sales per square foot of any retailer, at least at one time they did. So it's a big, rich mix. And I do believe that you had a roundtable recently that was focused on retail. Is that right, Loretta?
Yeah, the IREI Live webinar series. It was looked at the future of retail and logistics.
And what came of that?
Well, you know, I think it was a really interesting conversation. And, you know, like I said, a lot of it focused on repositioning retail and opportunities around that. And a lot of it spoke about, you know, what was happening on the logistics side. You know, if you, again, the warehouse and industrial market is, you know, so appealing right now and has been for a number of years. And of course, many of the people on the webinar were happy to talk about, you know, how strong the performance has been and how clear the trends for future growth are. But there was definitely the attitude that for the retail investment, there's a real contrarian play to be made in retail. The cap rates are higher, and you know, if you're just looking for that sort of that, if you're looking for higher yield, you know, you might be able to do better with the right retail than looking at some of the hotter property types like logistics.
Mm. Now you have another story, a major feature in the magazine in the December edition called Returning to a New Normal, and explores what the future might hold for commercial real estate. Again, what were some of the observations and maybe conclusions?
Well, and I think, you know, just kind of building on what we've just said, you know, much of what we've said about the retail industry and the challenges and opportunities there, we also looked in the story across property types. So, you know, the future has probably continued strong performance for industrial and apartments. Those have done extremely well in the past couple of years. They probably will continue to perform, although perhaps with some deceleration of the trend. You know, you can't run red hot forever. Even apartments, which had some of their strongest rental growth ever in this past year, rents are growing, but not as fast, is sort of the message coming out of November. But you know, when you think about what the bigger picture of what sort of a new normal is and what it might be as we, you know, emerge from this pandemic. And it is sort of challenging to talk about this right now, given that it does feel like the pandemic is going into its, you know, another big variant, another big sort of surge and a lot of concerns. Once again, I'm hearing, you know, in Manhattan, New York City, it feels like 2020 all over again. There's a lot of concern and fear. Once again, it is one of those things where, as we look across property types, and this is again something we've been talking about, we are going to see some real changes. And I, you know, to talk about what some of those changes are going to be, one of the big areas of what will the new normal look like, and we've spoken about this, is the question of what the office market is going to look like and what will the new normal for office be. And I think it's pretty clear that a more flexible work style is very much what the future of the office is going to look like. You know, we're going to see a lot more flexibility in people's hours, in where they work, in how they work. And that might mean, you know, less office space needed overall. It might also end up being a slight negative for suburban office, although suburban office has done quite well amid the pandemic as people sort of, you know, exited the urban core. When you only have to go to work, go to the office once or twice a week, you're willing to take a longer commute. I think you can speak to that quite seriously. It, mm-hmm. You know, and because you're willing to take that longer commute, offices can then stay in the CBD, even as we're seeing this move towards suburban lifestyle across both the single family rental and the apartment sector. You're seeing much, much greater demand right now for suburban places to live. But that hasn't necessarily translated to greater demand for suburban places to work.
Yeah, you know, we interviewed a fellow, an executive from KBS, about office. And obviously, KBS is a major office holder. And he said that future offices are likely to be more social club and talent recruitment and retention tools than what we have seen today. Which is really interesting. You talk about the hybrid approach. People have talked about satellite offices. Then you get into the whole flexible office situation with WeWork and its competitors and so on. But the idea that they've got to bring something new to bear, they got to have to be thinking in terms of what is going to make a person want to come to the office versus work at home when they can be just as productive, maybe even more productive at home. And it's a tall order. And depending on the type of business you are, the office may be indispensable or it may not be indispensable. So I noticed that Carly Tripp from Nuveen is quoted in the article as saying, expect the unexpected. And it seems more and more that that's kind of the slogan of the decade, whether it's real estate or a lot of other industries as well.
Yeah. And, you know, when you talk about, this is the other aspect of the office and the longer commute is if you don't have to go to the office at all, then you can live anywhere. And with people given that option to live anywhere, it's really interesting to see the sort of choices they're making about where they would live. And a lot of that, you know, we're seeing a lot of move toward more affordable markets, in the Sun Belt in particular, or near, we can consider almost resort locations. So if you have a passion for skiing and you don't have to be in the office, why live in, an hour from the office and commute in when you could live in a ski resort town and live your passion? Or that mm-hmm. passion might be, skiing, surfing, hiking, whatever your lifestyle is, or being closer to family, closer to your children or closer to your parents. All of the options that people might have, it's really going to open up people's opportunities to have a better and more interesting life and, to have both a work that they find fulfilling, but a life outside of work that is also more fulfilling. I'm very excited about this. The less we tie people to a specific office space, the more we can see them thriving. But is this a negative for the office sector? Maybe a little bit, maybe more than a little bit, but it's also a huge positive for some of the other property sectors, especially those in these markets where people want to live and are flocking to.
Yeah, it's exciting. It's going to be an exciting new year. And with that, Loretta, happy holidays to you and yours, and we'll pick this up again next year.
Same to you. Happy 2022.
This podcast has been sponsored by Juniper Square. Juniper Square is transforming the private capital markets industry with solutions and services that streamline fundraising, investment operations, and investor reporting. Designed for commercial real estate, Juniper Square is trusted by hundreds of investment sponsors to manage more than $1 trillion in real estate investments. Reach Juniper Square at junipersquare.com.